Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
All right. Hello. Welcome, everyone, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. I am Michael, your host. We are back after an extended winter break. And when I say extended, David, it went on for 4 months.
Yes, it did.
And I think it's because we had covered so much Star Trek during the tail end of 2020.
That was like a tornado of Star Trek stuff.
That we had neglected other shows that we do on this network.
Yes.
So we had to focus on those when we came back from winter break. But we are here now, and we will not be away from our listeners, from all of you lovely people, for very long, because there's a lot of things going on. The first contact day that just happened.
Yes.
I mean, just gave us a plethora of information that I don't think any of us were really expecting, or, and I'll just say this quite frankly, I was unprepared for. I did not realize they were going to start dropping news on us. I didn't expect it, because we had barely had a Star Trek, what was it, reveal like 7-8 months ago when all of them got together for the virtual Comic-Con.
Yes.
That was about a, excuse me, I'm dying over here, Dave. I was gone for 4 months and forgot how to talk on a microphone. So we had the Comic-Con. That's what it was. It was the virtual Comic-Con, and we were given so much information there that I was like, okay, well, in the world of Star Trek, is there really that much more going on? And apparently there is.
There is. Yeah.
So we have a lot of things to get through today, and we're going to try to sift through all this new Star Trek news as much as possible today. Now, if you're new to our show, you can find all of our discussions on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search Star Trek From the Holodeck and be sure to share our show. Give us thumbs up. And if you are an iTunes listener, give us a review. Tell us how great we are, or hate on us. That's fine. I like abuse.
I like abuse. You like being in the torture booth.
I do, Dave, but mostly if 709 is in there with me, maybe a little bit of T'Pol.
Maybe some
later seasons Janeway.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say Janeway.
Yeah. All right, Dave. So our first bit of news. Paramount sets top secret Star Trek movie for summer 2023 to be produced by J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot. Now, this isn't the big news necessarily. I mean, this isn't groundbreaking. We know J.J. Abrams is involved with the film side of Star Trek. He is still partnered with Paramount. So this isn't new. What's new is that we are not sure what movie they're fucking talking about.
Yeah,
because this seems to be something that's disconnected from what we talked about just a few weeks ago with the writer from Discovery, Vasquez. I forgot her first name. If you remember, it was announced that they had hired one of the writers from Discovery to direct and write a Star Trek feature film for J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot.
Yeah, Kalinda Vasquez.
So now we're not sure what's happening, because this latest script is at least the fourth Trek film that has gone into development at Bad Robot and Paramount since the release of Star Trek Beyond in summer of 2016.
And if I'm not correct, it's the fourth one, because you had Quentin Tarantino's.
Correct.
You had the guy from Revenant.
That's the same one as Tarantino.
Is it the same one?
Yeah.
And then you had,
there was a female director that was hired. They made a big spectacle that they hired a female director.
Female director.
And she was in a direct a film for the Kelvin timeline. Then they had brought on Noah Hawley.
Noah Hawley, that's the one.
To do his. Okay. And then we had the announcement of Vasquez. Now, technically, this is actually five unless the one they're talking about that comes out in 2023 is in fact Vasquez's script. Because if it's not, then
then you might. So where's the Noah Hawley one?
Right. So who knows what's happening? Nobody knows. Apparently, several individuals when this had released, because they didn't actually announce this right away. For some reason, this wasn't announced at First Contact Day. This was announced when Paramount released all their future slate of films.
In their investor meeting, if I'm not correct.
Right? Yes. And within the list, with not a lot of spectacle or celebration, was untitled Star Trek movie. Dated for June 2023. Now, the news is not that, hey, there's a Star Trek movie in production, because we've been hearing this for years now. The news is that there's an actual date. We have not been given a date, even with Tarantino's or the former director, lady director that was hired, or Noah Hawley. There was never a date. This film has an official date.
Has an official date.
And that's something to be happy about. According to numerous reports, a few trades reached out. I believe the Hollywood Reporter reached out to Paramount when this news became public, and this is their response. Are you ready?
Okay.
Paramount Pictures responded by saying, "The untitled Star Trek film is a top secret project that we're developing with J.J. Abrams producing."
Now,
that sounds really fucking exciting for some reason. Maybe really I'm easy because they say top secret. I'm like, whoa, top secret.
It works for me too. I mean, the thing that has me really, really interested too is the fact that it's Bad Robot. So automatically I'm like going, okay, so are we getting a Kelvin movie then?
Yes.
And then that's where I wanted to bring up to you. Do you think they're having an issue? The reason why everything's been so chaotic with the movies?
Yes, they are having issues.
Do you think that basically Paramount's kind of looking at this and saying, let's be honest. I mean, right now, besides Picard, besides that, the Discovery and, you know, all the other Lower Decks, their whole launch went really well. And Paramount's kind of looking at this going, should we tie everything together? And they're telling Bad Robot, you have to tie everything together then.
Okay, so you're onto something. I would agree with that. Everything has been leading in this direction for many years. Ever since the rumors had started that Viacom and CBS would be merging, that this was going to happen. The reason why we had split franchises was because CBS owned the TV side, Paramount owned the movie side. And that's why they were separate still. Now they're merged. And the reason why we had five or four films in production over the last 5 years is because of that merger. And that's why things were put on the back burner and then also just shrugged away and said, fuck this film. We're not going to do this anymore. Moving forward, this is our plan. And there's a few things you can take away from this news. If this is, in fact, the Vasquez script, okay, the writer from Star Trek Discovery, and she's directing this with JJ.
Yes.
There's only one reason to do that. She's not a big name, necessarily. The reason why they're doing it is because they're using someone who is involved and in the know when it comes to the prime timeline currently.
Currently,
and yes. Then you bring J.J. Abrams, who's doing the Kelvin timeline. And I have a big feeling that this is going to be the ultimate crossover. I'm not saying we're going to get Picard and Discovery and Kirk. I'm not saying we're getting that. I'm saying this is going to be a prime timeline and Kelvin timeline crossover.
A merger.
They're going basically to find a way to either align the universes or flesh the idea of these two parallel universes further.
Which would have made sense, because in the past couple of years, me and you, every time a new season of anything Star Trek comes out, what is the one thing that we keep saying, are they going to hint at this?
Yeah.
And it was only till last season's Discovery that they hinted at the whole point that the Kelvin timeline exists.
And it's because CBS and Paramount have merged. That's why they acknowledged it.
And they finally acknowledged it. So,
and that's another thing, Dave, the fact that they were willing to acknowledge it the way they did, it makes me feel like it was breadcrumbs, because one thing that Kurtzman is doing correctly, I know Kurtzman is a little controversial and I have my problems with him as well when it comes to certain things, but you can say that he is strategic and he has a plan for what they're now calling the Star Trek universe. He does have a plan.
Yes.
You can tell with how he's rolling things out. It isn't like, hey, this is a good idea, guys. Let's do this. And because Kurtzman seems to have a strategy, it feels like bringing J.J. Abrams on, which is his mentor and the person who gave him his shot with the Kelvin timeline films, by the way, as well as Lost and other projects.
Yeah.
Him and J.J. have a long career. It seems like they are combining their forces to tell a story that possibly involves both. Both the Prime timeline and Kelvin.
Which would be really awesome.
It'd be fun, you're going to have a lot of work making sure the mainstream can follow what the fuck you're doing.
Exactly, especially since, let's be honest, would you tune in on a film with, I'm just going to say it, do you think Sonequa Martin-Green's ready to lead a film?
No.
Burnham.
No. And not that she's not good. She's just as she isn't theatrical A-list superstardom celebrity. She exactly. isn't. She's not drawing in an audience at the theater. It's the reason why 2009 Star Trek worked so well is because J.J. Abrams was coming off a hot streak, and the draw for that 2009 film for the mainstream was J.J. Abrams' name. That's it. That's why that movie did so well. Do you remember, Dave? We were in film school, I think, when it was announced.
Yeah.
And we were excited. We're like, holy shit, this is a game changer for Star Trek. And that's the reason why we were also excited about the Tarantino.
Because it's a big name.
Because it's a big name that will draw in mainstream audiences as well. Which, listen, we need that. I've always said this. We need the mainstream on our side. Otherwise, we're not going to get Star Trek films. We're not. We need to have that big box office draw if we hope to get films down the road. And in order for a movie to be successful in this fucking climate, because of the superhero films that have changed the game forever, you need to have something that you can sensationalize in the ways of marketing. Who's going to be involved in this? And as of right now, this top secret project is interesting to me as a Star Trek fan, but as a regular movie consumer as well, a movie goer, it doesn't really quite do it for me. Vasquez, who is she? Like, exactly. She's a capable writer, yeah. But, okay, people aren't vying to go see a Vasquez-directed film. No one knows who she is. And JJ, let's be honest, has kind of worn out his welcome with a lot of people within fandoms currently.
Yeah, exactly.
So neither of them are exactly lighting the world on fire in the ways of, you know, hype. So this top secret project, I hope, doesn't come off as a gimmick, but they have to have something fucking special planned if they hope to really bring in a large audience.
Now, Mike, this is where my tinfoil hat comes into play. So
Q's going to be involved somehow.
No, I'm just saying this. Okay. I'm not saying that Vasquez doesn't have the skill to be a director for Star Trek.
Yeah.
First and foremost, but
Kalinda Vasquez, that's Kalinda
Vasquez. She writer. Sure. She's the writer of Discovery. Fantastic. But just like what you said, they need a box office name to do it. Now, last season, we did have a box office filmmaker show up on Star Trek.
Oh,
that would be, everyone agrees, if he were to do a Star Trek film, would bring fans in.
And who is this person?
Is David Cronenberg.
Yep.
What do you think that is the name that they could pull in and say, hey, here's the Star Trek film. It's being directed by David Cronenberg.
Mm-hmm.
It's being written by Vasquez. There's no doubt about that because the reports say they're working on a project written by Vasquez.
But
what happens if the director, she's not in the director's seat? It's Cronenberg.
Yeah. Wasn't the news originally, though, that she was directing and writing? That's what I had heard, but
that's what I heard. But now in this one, it's saying that's just the writing.
The writer, yeah.
And I'm like going,
okay, that makes me feel a little more comfortable.
But would do you think that would actually bring a lot of Star Trek fans excited at that point if you found out David Cronenberg is doing a Star Trek film?
Yeah, I think you need a name director. If you have Kalina Vasquez write it, that's fine.
That's fine.
In fact, that's a smart idea because she can bring the two franchises together.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. But I definitely think, Dave, we need a name director. We need something that's really going to get people invested.
And especially since we're talking about a storyline that would bring the two Star Trek universes together. And last season, David Cronenberg's character is the centerpiece that ties all of that together.
Yep.
And one thing that me and you were discussing when we did that episode is, how the hell did they get David Cronenberg? And why did they get just David Cronenberg to show up to be this character?
Well, he's an actor too.
Yeah, but he's more of a filmmaker at that point.
Yeah.
Everyone knows him as a filmmaker, a genius filmmaker.
Didn't they ask him if he would direct an episode of Discovery? And he said no.
No, because it's television. But also remember in that same interview, he said he's open to working with Star Trek, but just not on the
television. Hey, listen, side. I would be okay with it.
If you were to work on a film?
You imagine Star Trek directed by Cronenberg. I'm like, what the fuck? That's amazing.
That would get an eye catcher.
It would, but also, how many people in the younger demo is like, oh, David Cronenberg?
That's what I mean. It's like, okay, if they were to actually do that, is that the name that they bring? Because, like, it's obvious at this point, the Quentin Tarantino Star Trek film is right now shelved.
Yeah, it's not shelved. It's not happening. Yeah.
So you can't get Tarantino. But if you got Cronenberg, that's not a bad trade.
No, for film fans, that's fantastic. I just don't know if that younger demo is going to be like, oh, yeah, let's go see this. They don't know who the fuck David Cronenberg is. All right, Dave. So let's change directions here. Let's switch gears to some Star Trek Picard Season 2 news. Now, Dave, we, during our last discussion, our news discussion, we had made fun of the fact that Q might be involved.
I was just joking.
Boy, if we're not prophets, Dave, we are like the prophets of Bajor, Dave. We foretold Q's appearance.
I swear to God, Mike. We will cover Picard Season 2.
I was laughing so hard, Dave, because I was re-listening to our show we did where we said, what if they bring Q and Q looks at, in the very opening minutes, even if it's terribly written, I'd be okay with it. He looks at Picard and says, oh, you're a robot. That won't do. Snaps his fingers and Picard's a human again. Dead. And we just reverse everything that shitty Shay Band did.
Dude.
They're not doing that,
but
okay. So first let's say what's happening. Cause we've just alluded to it.
Yeah.
Q, John DeLancey, who plays Q, Star Trek, The Next Generation, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager, is returning to the world of Star Trek to play, of course, the iconic character Q, not villain. Okay. Fucking trade magazines out there, not knowing your Trek. Q. Let's get this straight. Let's say it out loud, everyone. Q is not a villain. He's never been a villain. A bit of a nemesis at times.
He's an adversary.
An adversary. There you go. Like, yes, those things. Absolutely. More than anything, he was a tool to create a way to delve into the philosophical aspects of an episode.
Yes.
And that being said, Dave, if they bring Q in and he's nothing like Q, just because he sounds like him and he dances around like him and antagonizes Picard like him, that doesn't mean it's going to be Q. If you're going to bring a character into Star Trek again like this, a huge iconic name like Q, he has to be used in a very specific way. Yeah. And it has to be a way that explores the avenues and the intricacies of philosophy. Yes. And how it pertains to Picard as an individual. If you don't do that, then there's no fucking reason to have Q in this.
Yes.
Other than the fact that you're desperate after season one was very lackluster to many of the Star Trek elite.
Yes. And on top of that, when you bring in Q, you're tying into one of the elements that just earlier in the show I mentioned. The overall story arc of TNG is the question, is humanity worthy? And that teaser trailer, dude, even though it was really simple, I like the fact that they bring up Q saying that basically the game never ends.
Yeah, but wasn't that old footage, old sounds?
That I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think any of that was new.
Even though it might not be new, the fact that they emphasize that line, the game never ends, Q's test to Picard is, hey, is humanity worthy? Now, are you worthy of going up there? We just saw season one, right? And I have to say, if I were Q, I would be very upset at Picard, because Picard proved without a shadow of a doubt in TNG, he was worthy of being out there in the stars. In season one, Picard did everything that all Star Trek fans everywhere agreed with. The season one Picard is not Picard, because he was a man who basically got trampled on, who bemoaned himself, who basically just utterly destroyed his own legacy. And to me, that's why when we finished Picard, or our review of Picard, I thought bringing in Q, while you said that basically it'd be terrible, and you know that'd be terrible writing, they're not going to do it. But if you're going to do a storyline, how that would be an awesome story of Q coming back and basically telling Picard, wait a minute, you started this test to actually prove to me that humanity's worthy. We should allow David, them in the stars.
We've already answered that question. We don't want to. Do we really want to pose the same question? That's why you don't bring a character like this back.
But
unless you have a new strategy that involves similarities. But we can't ask the same question.
But here's the thing, though. You destroyed the character of Picard in season one.
Okay, but what does that mean to the character? That's writing. That has nothing to do with the actual story of the show. That's bad writing.
It is. It is.
So if they use Q to fix the mistakes of season one, and they use him to ask questions and do what you're saying, because I do agree with you. You're not far off. You're not off base with your thoughts. It does make sense that they would use Q to question Picard's actions over the last 20 years. What has happened to you, Picard? You became a
shell.
Yeah, a shell of your former self, you know, content with living on a vineyard. I'm trying to be positive here, because we could say all the things they could do. And I am excited as a Star Trek fan that Q is back. But as a critic and as a Star Trek fan, I'm a little hesitant, because why run the risk of destroying a character unless you're fully competent with that script, with your writing? Because look what they did with Seven.
Oh, my God. Don't remind me, Mike.
I mean, they bring Seven in. And I'm okay with characters being different. And I've said this during our Picard discussions, but one of my biggest problems with bringing Seven on was it was just for fan service. It wasn't there to actually move the story forward or, you know, do something meaningful with her character, because she wasn't Seven. Seven's a scientist, not Sarah Connor.
Yes.
She has a brilliant mind and is curious with the intricacies of humanity. That's what was interesting about her. She was the Data of Voyager. She was the Spock of Voyager. She was an interesting character, a fantastic way to, you know, analyze a character. She was a character study. And they bring her into Picard to simply be, hey, guys, Seven of Nine. Oh, I mean, Sarah Connor, who now wields a gun and has a chip on her shoulder. Seven of Nine was never like this. And people change. I get it. 20 years have gone by. A lot has transpired in the life of Seven. I get it. But you didn't show us that.
Yes.
You didn't actually give us things that would back up this complete change in character from scientist and someone who's curious to I have a gun and I'm angry and I'm going to kill people. And oh, by the way, I go down on pussy now. Like, that's fine, too. Believe me, that's OK.
That's OK.
But where is the parts that explain things? That's called story.
Yes.
And it's not there. And
it's not there.
Yes, we have a new showrunner, Dave. We do. We have a new showrunner. Shaban is not involved in the day to day. He was involved as far as executive producers are involved. He had say in the story, but he's not involved in that writing room. He's not sitting there writing out and punching up scripts. Shaban has no history with TV, which was my problem number one, putting him in the showrunner seat. Why would you give someone who has no experience running TV or writing for TV?
Exactly.
He's a novelist. You're giving him the responsibility and the reins to tell the story of one of the most beloved characters in Star Trek. And in my opinion, he bombed in almost every single way.
Oh, easily.
So I am being perfectly honest. I'm not overly excited for the season two.
Yeah.
For the second season of Picard. And I feel like Q, Dave, I'm saying it now. I don't feel like he's going to be used appropriately. I feel like they're going to squander his character and we're all going to be left wondering why he even showed up other than fan service.
Fan service or as you alluded, bad writing, fixing problems from season one.
Yeah. I mean, Picard was bad, man. And it hurts my soul to say that. And I know there are Star Trek fans who listen to our show who probably, I know they've gotten upset. For the most part, a lot of the Star Trek fans agree with us that the show wasn't
good.
Very great.
It wasn't good.
There's a lot of for no reasons. So I'm not super excited about this. Now, I will say that I did tear up during the teaser when I saw the Queen of Hearts and yes. My jaw dropped. I'm like, holy shit, they're fucking doing this. And I will say I got excited.
Yes.
I did when Same the card way. Started dissolving away and all you're left with is the corner of the queue. And I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. So the Star Trek fan in me is giddy and excited, but you know,
the critic and the realist
knows that I need to hold back a bit on my excitement. Otherwise, I'm going to come into the show every week furious and angry.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be. I want to enjoy Star Trek. So I'm trying to be optimistic, but at the same time, I'm seeing the reality of the fact that the show is not going to do a complete 180. There's just... Is it a 180? Yeah, one, they're not going to do a complete 180. I just don't see them doing it. They have the exact same writers in that writing room. Yes, they have a new showrunner, which is definitely going to help.
That's a bonus.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And like you, I mean, I'm on kind of the same page. I'm trying to approach it in a more positive way. That's why I bring up the fact, well, to me, a positive is Q fixing the whole season one. Let's Thanos that.
I can already tell you what I think they should do, Dave. And this isn't being, Star Trek know-it-all. The entire purpose of Q in season two needs to be about questioning true existence. And what does it mean to be alive? Because the card's dead. Yeah. You can cut it up, slice it however you want.
That would be kind of cool.
You can say Picard's alive all you want. He's dead.
He's dead.
You put his consciousness inside of a machine.
Are you truly Picard?
Exactly. Now, if they go in that direction and get very existential with it, and you question what it really means to be human and continue Data's journey through Picard, and you connect Data's children with this, and now you bring in Q, then suddenly you have me. It has to be connected to that golem aspect.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That would actually be a more proper way as a writer to bring in bring those elements together and use Q in that way. And I'm going to take a step back. if they were to actually do that, I could be excited for that.
I could too. And they have to be smart. They have to understand Star Trek. They have to understand what Q meant to Star Trek. We have to see some philosophy. There was no philosophy in the first season of Picard.
None.
And Picard is the most philosophical character of all of Star Trek. In many ways, Kirk, and I know this might be debatable, but to me, Kirk was more of the Shakespearean homages that they use. And sure, we had a lot of Shakespearean vibes with Picard. And there was a lot of philosophy in the original series. But Picard was the philosopher.
Was the philosopher.
As well. That was part of him. And yet we didn't get...
Nothing. Like,
how? You're doing a story in Picard. It's literally called fucking Picard.
Picard.
And there is no philosophy.
And you had the elements. You had the elements too.
Everything was there, David. You had Data's offspring.
Yeah, Data's offspring. You had Picard dealing with the fact that he has an incurable disease.
You have the fact that Starfleet turned
on Picard.
On Picard, and also the Federation turned on the Romulan refugees.
Yes.
You could have explored the needs of the many. You could have really gone down that philosophical road, but instead chose not to. You chose politics, modern contemporary politics, to express a fucking tired idea on immigration.
And Patrick Stewart actually masquerading with a mustache with a bad French accent.
You traded in philosophy for thoughts on white privilege, which doesn't even make sense in the world of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all about exploring the nuances of white privilege and identity politics in the right TV show. I'm a progressive guy. I'm okay with those types of things. Star Trek's always been very liberal and very progressive, but it has to fit. And you're dealing with white privilege in a show where white privilege doesn't exist. This is the world of Star Trek.
Exactly.
Not our world.
Not our world.
So you traded in philosophy for things that don't even make sense.
It was supposed to be a perfect utopia at that point. There is no privilege, white privilege. There is no like racism in Star Trek at that point in that time
frame. Yeah, it just, dude, and that's my problem with it. And if they bring Q in to rectify that problem, then I will be okay. And I will look back at season one as a starter. You know, we're getting started. So, all right, let's talk about better things like Lower Decks season two.
I'm so excited for
this
one.
How the fuck did Lower Decks end up being more exciting for me? I never would have expected that. In fact, I hated the idea of Lower Decks.
Yes, you did. You did.
And yet, by the end of the first season, I was all about it, dude.
You were Boimler.
I was the Titan. Oh, man. I was all about Lower Decks. And when I watched the season two teaser for Lower Decks, I got excited, A, because they are really far along on these shows. They've been working their ass off during the pandemic. They did not slow down one bit because their plan of action was, hey, we have been slowed down because of the pandemic. But once we get things straightened out, we're going to focus on writing, producing, and then getting into the studio to start doing these episodes here. Because yes. Discovery season four also had a teaser trailer. So they are working their asses off. And I feel like the ending of 2021 and the beginning of 2022 all the way into 2023 is going to be huge for Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
With all of this planning and strategy. So, yes, we were given a first look at Lower Decks season two, which, David, are you ready? It arrives on Thursday, August 12th. That's only a few months away.
Yes.
It's already here. Season two. The series created by Mike McMahon. We're doing this. I'm excited.
And
Dave,
I'm excited, dude.
Did you watch the teaser?
Yes, I did. I'm sorry. I got so giddy knowing the fact that they're going to be continuing the entire series right from where we left off. So Boimler's on Titan with Captain Riker. And I was like cracking up, dude, because I'm going,
it's so great.
We're gonna have Jonathan Franks actually playing Riker as a captain.
It's going to be fun, it's man. Gonna,
in a comedic way,
yeah.
too. So I know Jonathan Franks is going to have a lot of fun with this one.
Well, Dave, yes, it's going to be fun. It's going to be funny. And the thing about this, for our new listeners out there who don't understand why I didn't like Picard but love Lower Decks, Star Trek Lower Decks is the most Star Trek of all of the Kurtzman era. And it shouldn't have been that way. None of us expected that. And yet, Lower Decks feels more legit. Despite, I mean, take away some, yes, you have the over-the-top humor, but that's the nature of the show. But even in a show that's drenched in satire, they found ways to share little notes of philosophy. Have an awesome character study of our main character with a complete arc from beginning to end.
Yes.
It was really well done. Very well written show for being a cartoon.
Oh, yeah. And the teaser just continued that because it showed, dude, I was cracking up at the scene with Mariner in the holodeck scene where she's in the torture room from Chain of Command.
Yeah. With the four lights.
With the four lights.
That's amazing, dude. I was like,
this is why I love this series now, because like they understand Star Trek history, but they're going to do it through a lens of comedy and fun.
Well, it's funny because it's jokes that I've never been involved with the Star Trek fandom per se until we started doing the show.
Yeah.
So when I'm watching Lower Decks, I see a lot of these jokes that me and my brother and my mom grew up having, you know, doing these types of jokes, making fun of the four lights, you know, though there are five lights, there are four lights. And Lower Decks was filled with a lot of the jokes that we did jokes, growing yeah. up watching Star Trek. I'm like, yes, Mike McMahon really is a Star Trek nerd.
He understands.
Yeah.
And, you know, like where Shaban says, I'm a Star Trek fan. I believe Mike McMahon's more of a Star Trek fan than
Michael Sheen. Oh, without a doubt. Mike McMahon has nothing to prove anymore. He is 100% a legit Star Trek fan.
A Star Trek fan.
It oozes into every single episode how legit he is as a Star Trek fan. Or, yeah, how legit he is of a Star Trek fan.
Do you think they're actually going to take away Boimler from Titan?
No, they'll put him back. He'll end up getting fired, or he'll end up thinking Riker is a loose cannon, which is kind of what the teaser made him look like. Yeah,
look like.
And maybe it's just too much for him, and he'll get back to the
He'll be too scary Cerritos. For him.
Yeah. Okay, so Captain Burnham deals with a new threat and new uniforms in Star Trek Discovery Season 4 teaser. Now, Dave, let's talk about the new uniforms first off. I love them.
They're very more military looking.
They feel like classic Star Trek.
Classic Star Trek, yeah.
From the movies.
Yes. They're very reminiscent of Star Trek 1.
And I like it because one of my biggest problems, because I've enjoyed Discovery, and I would consider myself a fan of Discovery. It's not perfect, but it's a good show. But my biggest, you know, joke, you know, it's a gripe, but it doesn't really matter. All I'm about is I'm 100% about writing, so I'm not going to gripe about little things. But you and I had made fun of the pajamas.
Yes.
Of Discovery. Like, they're not uniforms. They're pajamas. And they're wearing Reeboks. They're shoes. It just looks a little funny. Sometimes they look like Skechers from the early to mid 2000s when those were popular. So the change in uniforms is definitely welcomed. And the first thing I thought of was classic Star Trek films.
Yeah,
Star Trek. They look exactly the same. Now, there were some people complaining, saying they look too formal and too militaristic for Star Trek uniforms. And I'm glad someone did this, because I was thinking the same thing. There was a meme that popped up sharing that sentiment with Kirk wearing his uniform that looks just like Burnham's uniform. And it was like, tell us why this uniform doesn't work. It's true, though.
It's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, when people complain, especially with the trailer, with the teaser trailer, a lot of the complaints just seem way too trolly.
They're a little petty.
It's a little petty.
It's things, they don't have things to complain about, so they're just nitpicking.
It's like, if you're going to complain about the uniforms, then did you not know all the different types of uniforms in Star Trek's past? Yes, these are a little too military looking, but that's the okay because guess what? In Star Trek's history, the uniforms were military looking. They're called Starfleet.
Yeah. Like, I personally feel like it's a step up from the other uniforms we've had. I liked the uniforms of the new Starfleet and Federation in the future in the Discovery Season 3.
Well, here's the thing.
That the Admiral wore and his crew. Yeah. I like the way they look. Well, I just didn't like, I've never liked Discovery's uniform. It felt weird.
Well, here's the thing about Discovery, Discovery also. Discovery has to reset the way the galaxy sees Starfleet right now. And the best way to do it, you don't want to be approaching a diplomatic situation dressed in a tube tie and basically a short skirt.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
Well, no. And also, I feel like Season 4 is probably going to be Star Trek Discovery finally finding its legs.
Yeah.
We have said that season 1 was okay. Season 2 was very strong. Season 3 was okay for the most part until the ending. The last, 2-3 episodes felt a little off. But season 4, we have said already on numerous shows that season 4 is probably going to be the show where it finally finds itself. We have a captain. We are finally understanding our crew individually and who they are, their wants, their dislikes. You know, motivation, Dave, it's called character motivation. Makes these characters tick. So because they really covered a lot of ground last season, season 4 is probably going to be that much better in the ways of a show truly finding itself. And if you look at Star Trek shows from years past, typically, that's when our shows find themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The fourth season of Next Generation was fantastic. And that's when it really got going and got good. Deep Space Nine, same thing.
Same thing.
Voyager, same thing. Enterprise, its final season, fourth season was really good. One.
And like my only issue with the teaser trailer is like, so another quote unquote anomaly shows up and they have to go investigate it. Okay. We're going to do an anomaly thing. The only thing I ask is do not turn the anomaly into the burn because that was a wasted potential right there.
Well, it looks like something major is happening in this episode or in this season. In the trailer, season 4 of Star Trek Discovery finds Captain Burnham and the crew of the USS Discovery facing a threat unlike they've ever encountered, with Federation and non-Federation worlds alike feeling the impact, and they must confront the unknown and work together to ensure a hopeful future for all. David, correct me if I'm wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. Was Sakul in the trailer?
Yes, he was.
Oh, fuck me.
And, well, Mike, they gotta bring back, they have to bring back you-know-who. And if they bring back him, then Sakul has to come with him.
He's the Jar Jar Binks of Star Trek. He was an idiot. I just wanted them to pull phasers and, set the setting to full effect and just vaporize him. Like, get him out of the fucking show. He was so annoying. He was so pointless.
The only reason why he was there was to pull...
It was to justify putting Burnham in the captain's seat by the end of the show because you had to remove
Saru.
And that's the way they did it. And listen to our discussions, to our past discussions on why that didn't work for me. I felt very lazy. I don't want to get into it again and get mad, Dave. I don't want to get mad.
You don't want to get mad.
And I've been very negative the last 20 minutes.
I want to be honest. When I saw the teaser trailer and I saw Sukal, I knew at that moment this is when Mike would scream at the monitor.
I was like Kirk and I yelled Khan.
But like, here's the thing,
Mike. Except I yelled Sakul. Like, yeah. Sakul!
They have to bring back Sakul because I want Saru back.
No.
You need Saru back.
Yeah. No, Saru needs to come back.
Saru has to come back.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that basically, hey, Sakul is coming back because Saru needs to come back.
Yeah. Hopefully he gets killed off. Hopefully they David him in the opening 30 minutes.
You're gonna hope that basically they just wipe him out of existence.
Yeah, I hope the Klingons kill him and then Saru can say, I will never forgive the Klingons for the death of Sakul.
And the death of my son.
Yeah.
Because that's what Saru treated like Sakul as. It was his child.
Yeah, it was not very fun, Dave.
No, it was not.
So the new season of Star Trek Discovery will premiere this year, 2021. I'm assuming it's going to be around the same time as this past season, towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like probably December. Hopefully it doesn't bleed into the new year. I'm not a fan of that because we go to winter break and we have to come back. And sometimes we're behind schedule. So hopefully the entire season airs during 2021 before December. That'll be nice. And Picard doesn't air until, what, 2022?
2022.
Am I right on that one?
Yes, you are. Because it's... Let me double check that.
Well, while you double check, Dave, you and I are going to go to a very quick break. And then when we get back, we're going to jump into some additional Star Trek news. We'll be right back.
Black alert. Black alert.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy. And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off, plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN, because without it, no free stuff. That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
You mama,
I'm going to see my home.
Fox. He's a rock.
Don't.
And he talks like an idiot.
Yes. Yes, I know, Mike.
All right, David.
Yep.
All right, so explore the Nexus in Star Trek Legends RPG. Now available on the Apple Arcade. If people aren't aware of what that is, basically, Apple now has a paid service for games.
For games, yeah.
And I believe it's $4.99 a month, but you do get a free month trial. And David, I will be playing this tonight. I looked at the trailer. It looks really fun. This is one of those games that I've been hoping that I had been hoping that we get for a very long time. You know, Star Wars has so many different mobile games and video
Star Trek
games.
Doesn't have very many.
No, we have very few. So to see them put this together, again, it goes right back to what I was saying about having a strategy. CBS and Paramount are going all in. There was a report last year after the merger of Paramount and CBS that moving forward, they were going to be focusing on two major franchises that they own. The first one was Mission Impossible, and the second was Star Trek. Now, not to put all their eggs in one basket, they are working on other things. However, Star Trek was going to be their main focus. I think they're hoping this is going to be their golden goose. They really want to push Star Trek out there to the mainstream. That's why they have the Nickelodeon show, Star Trek Prodigy. That's why they have Lower Decks. That's why they're doing, you know, all these different versions of Star Trek all at one time, because they're trying for one big push to get it out there. And now with this video game here, that's just more of that. And that is something that I am happy about from the CBS side of things and Paramount side of things, I should say, is that they are putting a lot of attention on the franchise of Star Trek. And I would say more so than we've seen in years, David, possibly since the 90s.
Oh, yeah, easily. I think we're seeing a resurgence in the Star Trek franchise. And because of that merger.
Yeah,
I'm really excited to see this kind of resurgence of Star Trek because it needs it.
We need it. If
we
Star
need
Trek
new products. We can't just keep living off of, you know.
Listen, Dave, I can live on rewatches. Believe me.
Yeah, but we need some new content.
We do. We need new content. If you hope to restock the pond of this aging fandom, you have to do stuff like this. And so far, it seems like they have a pretty good handle on how they're doing things.
And I agree with you. I mean, like a lot of criticism. There is a lot of criticism out there, video gamers, when it comes to mobile games.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one mobile game that actually does intrigue me, because the whole idea of building your own crew out of the legends that we all grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it's an easy slam dunk. It should be an easy game to enjoy.
We'll see. So the article says April kicks off with some Star Trek gaming news, including the launch of a brand new RPG. Also, both Star Trek Online and Star Trek Timelines are celebrating First Contact Day with special in-game events. So Star Trek Legends launches. Trek's past, present, and future collide in Star Trek Legends. Kind of sounds like Star Wars. Was it Battles?
Yes.
Remember when you would play different characters and you'd level them up?
And you level them up, yeah.
So it collides in Star Trek Legends, a new RPG that is available today exclusively on Apple Arcade, published by Tilting Point, makers of Star Trek Timelines. Star Trek Legends features a brand new storyline from Star Trek comic book author Mike Johnson, as well as characters from the entire Star Trek franchise, yeah, including the original series, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, Discovery, and Picard. I wonder if Sakul will be a playable character.
What happens if that you play tonight and here's your rare card? Here's your rare character, Mike. Yeah. Sakul.
Great. And his special powers is he irritates the fuck out of you.
And you just have to constantly.
There's nothing outside, is there? I'm scared. There's nothing outside. My mom, I'm waiting for her.
I'm waiting for my mom.
My mama told me to wait here for Starfleet to come get me.
Fucking hate him.
See, that'd just be your Star Trek karma, Mike.
I know. Hey, congratulations on starting the Legends. Here is Sakul. I get fucking no break at all. So according to Tilting Point, the gameplay is rooted in exploration and meaningful choices.
Yes.
Star Trek Legends lets players command the Starfleet ship USS Artemis and warp into the mysterious Nexus, a dimension where they will discover new worlds and characters from all across various Star Trek series.
Yeah.
When things go awry inside the Nexus, players and their crew must investigate and prevent a crisis.
And dude, I'm cracking up that they're using the Nexus as the core element of the entire Star Trek. Because, yeah, that makes sense now. You can jump into the Nexus point and just meet anybody.
Well, technically, they're in there forever, right?
Yeah, they're in there. Their memories are in there forever. That's why Picard was able to meet Kirk.
Yeah, and Dr. Soren. And hopefully, Dr. Soren. We see him. He'll be like, why? Why put me back?
Wait a minute. Does this mean that I get to actually have Whoopi Goldberg on my team?
You know what? Guinan will probably Guinan will be a player. There. If you're dealing with the Nexus, you have to have Dr. Soren and
Guinan.
And Guinan. It wouldn't make sense. I would have to say foul ball.
I will agree with that because I want my Guinan.
Yeah. So the game looks fun. Additional Star Trek Legends features include assembling the away team. Players can recruit from more than 40 legendary Star Trek characters at launch, including Kirk, Spock, Jean-Luc Picard, Janeway, Data, Burnham, and more, with additional characters joining the game on a regular basis. Good. I mean, there's literally an endless supply of characters. You could even start using some of the background players from back in the day, because us Star Trek nerds even love them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easily. Command the bridge. Players can assign their crew to post at the bridge of the USS Artemis in order to support the away team. Be a master tactician. Stunning graphics, unique events. Star Trek Legends will feature regular episodic updates and special challenges. Okay, so they're going to be involved. That's what makes these online mobile games fun, is when the team involved is constantly adding updates and doing special events. Those are the games that I always play for longer periods of times, is when there are those events and you have to get together with a team perhaps to help you excel. Have to work on team effort. So if they're doing that, this could end up being a big thing, because honestly, this looks better than Timelines. I wasn't a fan of Timelines. I did enjoy and still enjoy Star Trek Fleet Command.
Fleet Command, yeah.
I believe that's what it's called. It's on my phone. I don't know what it's titled necessarily, but I do enjoy the hell out of it. I'll post the teaser within the description on the website version of our show once this show is posted, and you can take a look at all the trailers that we talked about today.
Oh, yeah. Especially like in some of the teasers I've been seeing, the characters that they're pulling more characters in this mobile game than they did in Fleet Command. You know, like in Fleet Command, we could actually get some of the bridge crew like Kirk, Spock, McCoy, all of them to be part of our bridge crew. Here, they went totally out there. And you can, if you see some of the stills, you can see like characters like Gorn and even Khan. So this should be really cool. I mean, I would love to actually have Khan and Kirk on the same team, because that just would make me giggle.
Yeah. And Dr. Sauron, since he's the one who killed Sauron. Kirk. Yeah, it'd be fun. All right, Dave, this does bring us to the end of our discussion. I want to thank everyone for listening and bearing with our, you know, our fanboy complaints at times, our critical analyses of certain elements of your favorite Star Trek. We try to have a good time. But listen, there's some complaints, but at the heart of that, there is true love for Star Trek.
Exactly. We love Star Trek.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.